Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record program number 606, titled Project Paperclip and AIDS. This has been recorded on August 12th of the year 2007. Before I get into the main body of the broadcast, please take advantage of the enormous amount of material, the growing amount of material that is available online. If you only listen to the broadcast, either live and or online, you're missing really the better part of the For the Record experience, so to speak. There, I turn each program into a long article-length written description. There's an entire mini library of old anti-fascist books available online. WFMU is archiving the entire For the Record series on Real Audio. You can also download programs from Spitfire. So go to the Spitfire website and the linked websites, and there's a fantastic amount of information available. And increasingly, I think an intelligent use of the website is going to be critical for understanding the material that I'm presenting. Now, this broadcast is going to be, to a considerable extent, review of pieces of information that I have included it in one broadcast or another previously. Like many broadcasts, this program is speculative in nature. However, I think that in light of what's taking place on the world health scene, so to speak, this particular broadcast is more than overdue. Now, for many years, almost a quarter of a century, the better part of a quarter of a century, I've been discussing AIDS and the disturbing body of information indicating that AIDS is a man-made disease, that it's not a naturally occurring organism or a naturally occurring affliction. We're going to review some of the pieces of information pointing in that direction in the broadcast that we're now in. I strongly recommend that people who would like to flesh out their understanding not only take advantage of the many broadcasts, the For the Record broadcasts that are available online, including and especially For the Record 16, but also contact Spitfire and get a hold of AFA program number 16, dealing with AIDS as a biological warfare weapon. That is the foundational document, so to speak, for much of this research. Again, I'm going to review some points of information that figure prominently in this line of inquiry throughout the program. But again, the websites maintained by Spitfire and also other interests, and also the AFA program number 16, AIDS, Epidemic or Weapon of War, I believe, was the formal title of AFA 16. But do get a hold of that, because it'll flesh out your understanding. Now, the title of the program, Project Paperclip and AIDS, refers to a program that was engaged in by the U.S. National Security Establishment at the end of World War II, in which Nazi scientists and also Japanese scientists, many of them war criminals of the First Order, were brought into the United States for their technical expertise. One of the people, for example, somebody we're going to touch on later in this broadcast, who was brought into the United States and who worked on biological warfare programs for the United States, was Dr. Eric Traub, who was in charge of virological and bacteriological warfare research for the Third Reich. That Third Reich research was conducted under the auspices of the SS. And interestingly, and perhaps significantly, the Third Reich's bacteriological and virological warfare program was masked. It was officially labeled a cancer research program. In AFA 16, we took a look at the National Cancer Institute's viral oncology program conducted at what had been Fort Detrick, the Army's top biological warfare research center, and the program that appears to have given rise to AIDS was also that viral cancer research program. And so it is interesting that the BW program engaged in by the Third Reich was called cancer research, and the circumstantial evidence points to AIDS as an outgrowth of the National Cancer Institute's viral oncology research program, that is to say, researching how certain viruses cause cancer. We, by the way, are going to touch ever so briefly on the SV40 cancer-causing monkey virus that is now coursing through this and other the U.S. and other populations. We've talked about that most recently with Ed Haslam. But one of the things we're going to be looking at in this program is the possibility that the research which ultimately culminated in the development of AIDS may have been built on a foundation that comes from the Third Reich. Certainly, again, we know that Dr. Eric Traub and his assistant Anna Berger, who were in charge of BW, basically virological and bacteriological warfare research for the Third Reich, were brought into the United States under the auspices of Project Paperclip. We are going to take a look, too, at attempts, unsuccessful attempts, at bringing a Nazi war criminal named Dr. Franz Liesau Zacharias into the United States. Zacharias was based in Spain, and his name was on a list of Nazi criminals who were ostensibly wanted by the Allies so they could be brought to justice, but a knowing reading of that list, and in particular a knowledgeable reading of some of the people's CVs, their curricula vitae, suggests that some of them, including Dr. Franz Liesau Zacharias, may have actually been sought because of their expertise. Franz Liesau Zacharias, again, was based in Spain, remained in Spain until 1992. His specialty was securing monkeys and primates and other types of animals for experimental research by the Third Reich. And in particular, the Spanish press says that the experimentation program that he was involved with concerned deliberately infecting concentration camp inmates with diseases, including bubonic plague. And we're going to talk about that later on in the program. Certainly, whatever it was about Franz Liesau Zacharias that people found so intriguing, it was not the fact that he knew how to get monkeys out of Africa. That was something quite clearly that the U.S. knew how to do on its own. With two deadly evolved, I believe, at least in one case, a genetically engineered virus, namely AIDS, which appears to be an altered monkey virus, a virus that jumped from monkeys to humans. I believe it was deliberately altered. And with SV40, a cancer-causing monkey virus that contaminated vaccines, the issue of monkey viruses and what they can do to human beings is front and center here. Now, again, this program is speculative in nature, and I think that there is certainly more work to be done, but the personage of Franz Liesau Zacharias is a very, very interesting individual, and I think the interest shown in him by the U.S. at the end of the war might have implications for the development of AIDS. And there are some indications that AIDS may have grown out of research, again, whose foundation was rooted in the Third Reich. I'm going to review a little bit of information from the original AFA 16 program. One of the books that we utilized in AFA 16 was a book called A Higher Form of Killing, co-authored by Robert Harris and Jeremy Paxman. In the original Hill and Wang softcover edition, published in 1982, there is a passage which was deleted when the book was republished in 2002 by Random House. Random House is now owned by Bertelsmann, the publishing house of the SS. It is now the largest English language publisher. What is contained in the book, A Higher Form of Killing, right at the end of the 1982 edition, is some rumination about the possible development of a new type of disease-causing organism. And we're going to read first from text from The Higher Form of Killing, and in turn, that excerpts a bit of testimony from a Dr. MacArthur in a House subcommittee hearing that was drawing up the defense budget for fiscal year 1969 and 70. So what you're about to hear was something that was said on the floor of Congress in the hearings, basically in 1969. As long ago as 1962, quoting now from A Higher Form of Killing, beginning again, as long ago as 1962, 40 scientists were employed at the U.S. Army Biological Warfare Laboratories on full-time genetics research. Many others, it was said, appreciate the implications of genetics for their own work. The implications were made more specific that genetic engineering could solve one of the major disadvantages of biological warfare, that it is limited to diseases which occur naturally somewhere in the world. And then the quote from Dr. MacArthur. Now again, this is a doctor testifying in front of a House subcommittee that was drawing up the fiscal, the defense budget for fiscal year 1969 and 70. Dr. MacArthur said in 1969, "Within the next 5 to 10 years, it would probably be possible to make a new, infective microorganism which could differ in certain important respects from any known disease-causing organisms. Most important of these is that it might be refractory to the immunological and therapeutic processes upon which we depend to maintain our relative freedom from infectious disease." And, of course, refractory, it can mean resistant to. It can also mean breaking down, just as a prism refracts light, breaks it down into its component spectra. Then the authors, now bear in mind that was said in 1969, and of course AIDS first made its appearance to the general public anyway, in exactly that time period. The authors, Paxman and Harris, in 1982 went on to comment, "The possibility that such a supergerm may have been successfully produced in a laboratory somewhere in the world in the years since that assessment was made is one which should not be too readily cast aside." No, indeed. And, in For the Record program number 16, we looked at evidence that, in fact, that program did get funded. And lo and behold, a disease unlike any other appeared, a disease that breaks down, a sexually transmitted disease that destroys the immune system. We're going to talk about some of the many strange aspects of AIDS, in particular the epidemiology, later on in the program. But what we're going to do now is to review a curious aspect of this disease. I should mention that AIDS, it depends on what source one checks, but it was supposedly an African monkey virus that had existed in Africa for years. And then it was first detected very strangely among gays in three North American cities, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and New York. The notion that a disease as deadly as AIDS, basically you get it, you're dead, could have existed in a part of the world where people's health and their immune systems in particular were already compromised by bad diet, inadequate medical care, or other systemic infections or parasites, as is the case in Africa, and would not have been noticed is just a bit much. It strains the credibility. One of the very strange things about AIDS, again, supposedly a monkey virus that jumped to humans, one of the very strange things about AIDS is that there is a hereditary immunity to HIV infection. But that gene is a recessive one. It is only present in the white race. No other racial group has it. And according to some sources, it is only available in that it is peculiar to Northern Europeans, quote, Aryans, unquote. Certainly, this particular hereditary trait is present only in white people, and according to some sources, present only in purebred Northern Europeans or Aryans. Medical people and scientific people that I've mentioned this to have it was very strange. They actually laughed, not ha-ha laughter, but laughter in the sense of what Nietzsche said when he observed that, quote, "a joke is the epigram on the death of a feeling." Scientific and medically qualified people that I've discussed this with, without exception, they have viewed that as extremely suspicious and, in fact, indicative of the fact that AIDS was deliberately created, that nature is not going to do something like that. Here's an African monkey virus which mutates, becomes a deadly human scourge, but purebred Northern Europeans or white people just happen to have a hereditary immunity to it. It's the Aryan virus. That particular hereditary immunity appears to have also conferred limited immunity from the bubonic plague on the individuals who have it. And we're going to revisit a bit of research that we looked at in For the Record 472. In turn, we're going to access some information from the PBS.org website. It's called Secrets of the Dead, Case File, Mystery of the Black Death. And I'm going to reread some information about the CCR5 Delta 32 mutation. This is a mutation present only in white people and, according to some sources, only in purebred Northern Europeans, or, quote, Aryans, unquote, that confers basically freedom from infection by bubonic plague and AIDS. Reading now from Secrets of the Dead, Case File, Mystery of the Black Death. In September of 1665, George Vickers, a tailor in the small central England village of Iam, E-Y-A-M, received a parcel of cloth ridden with plague-infected fleas from London. 4 days later, Vickers died. By the end of the month, five more villagers had succumbed to the plague. The panicked town turned to their rector, William Montpassant, who persuaded them to quarantine the entire village to prevent the bacterium from spreading throughout the region. It seemed like suicide. A year later, the first outsiders ventured into Iam expecting to find a ghost town. Yet, miraculously, half the town had survived. How did so many villagers live through the most devastating disease known to man? Local Iam lore tells befuddling stories of plague survivors who had close contact with the bacterium but never caught the disease. Elizabeth Hancock buried six children and her husband in a week, but never became ill. The village gravedigger handled hundreds of plague-ravaged corpses, but survived as well. Could these people have somehow been immune to the Black Death? Dr. Stephen O'Brien of the National Institutes of Health in Washington, D.C., suggests they were. His work with HIV and the mutated form of the gene CCR called Delta 32 led him to Iam. In 1996, research showed that Delta 32 prevents HIV from entering human cells and infecting the body. O'Brien thought this principle could be applied to the plague bacterium, which affects the body in a similar manner. To determine whether the Iam plague survivors may have carried Delta 32, O'Brien tested the DNA of their modern descendants. What he found out was startling. And skipping down. For a disease-causing microorganism to infect the human body, there must be a gateway or portal through which it enters into human cells. The plague bacterium works this way, hijacking the white blood cells sent to eliminate it. Traveling inside the white blood cells to the lymph nodes, the bacteria break out and attack the focal point of the human immune system. Dr. Stephen O'Brien felt that the mutated CCR5 gene Delta 32 may have prevented the plague from being able to enter its host's white blood cells, unquote. And bear in mind, too, that it also appears to function that way with regard to AIDS. Continuing, Iam provided O'Brien an ideal opportunity to test this theory. Specifically, Iam was an isolated population known to have survived a plague epidemic. Everyone in the town would have been exposed to the bacterium, so it's likely that any life-saving genetic trait would have been possessed by each of these survivors. Like a Xerox machine, unquote, says O'Brien, their gene frequencies have been replicated for several generations without a lot of infusion from outside, unquote, thus providing a viable pool of survivor descendants who would have inherited such a trait. DNA samples could only be collected from direct descendants of the plague survivors. DNA is the principal component of chromosomes, which carry the genes that transmit hereditary characteristics. We inherit our DNA from our parents. Thus, Iam resident Joan Plant, for instance, may have inherited the Delta 32 mutation from one of her ancient relatives. Plant can trace her mother's lineage back 10 generations to the Blackwell siblings, Francis and Margaret, who both lived through the plague to the turn of the century. The next step was to harvest a DNA sample from Joan and the other descendants. DNA is found in the nuclei of cells. The amount is consistent in all typical cells, regardless of the size or function of that cell. One of the easiest methods of obtaining a DNA tissue sample is to take a cheek or buccal swab. Note the following passage. After 3 weeks of testing at the University College in London, Delta 32 had been found in 14% of the samples. This is a genetically significant percentage, yet what really did it mean? Could the villagers have inherited Delta 32 from elsewhere, residents who had moved to the community in the 350 years since the plague? Was this really a higher percentage than anywhere else? To find out, O'Brien assembled an international team of scientists to test for the presence of Delta 32 around the world. Quote, "Native Africans did not have Delta 32 at all," O'Brien says. "And when we looked at East Asians and Indians, they were also flat zero. In fact, the levels of Delta 32 found in Iam were only matched in regions of Europe that had been affected by the plague and in America, which was for the most part settled by European plague survivors and their descendants." Now, again, as mentioned at the very outset of this particular passage that I've been reading, the CCR5 Delta 32 provides immunity to, basically provides protection against infection by AIDS. Again, reviewing as we chorus into what I'm about to read, from this same passage. In 1996, research showed that Delta 32 prevents HIV from entering human cells and infecting the body. It also apparently conferred immunity to those who had the CCR5 Delta 32. It can provide immunity to the plague as well. Returning to the passage we were just reading, "Native Africans did not have Delta 32 at all," O'Brien says, "and when we looked at East Asians and Indians, they were also flat zero. In fact, the levels of Delta 32 found in Iam were only matched in regions of Europe that had been affected by the plague and in America, which was for the most part settled by European plague survivors and their descendants." Meanwhile, recent work with another disease strikingly similar to plague, AIDS, suggests O'Brien was on the right track. HIV, the virus that causes AIDS, tricks the immune system in a similar manner as the plague bacterium, targeting and taking over white blood cells. Virologist Dr. Bill Paxson at the Aaron Diamond AIDS Research Center in New York City noticed, quote, "The center had no study of people who were exposed to HIV, but who had remained negative," unquote. He began testing the blood of high-risk HIV-negative individuals like Steve Krohn, C-R-O-H-N, exposing their blood to 3,000 times the amount of HIV normally needed to infect a cell. Steve's blood never became infected. "We thought maybe we had infected the culture with bacteria or whatever," says Paxton. "So we went back to Steve, but it was the same result. We went back again and again. Same result," unquote. Paxton began studying Crohn's DNA and concluded there was some sort of blocking mechanism preventing the virus from binding to his cells. Further research showed that the mechanism was Delta 32. Scientists studying HIV first learned about the gateway blocking capacity of the CCR5 mutation in 1996. Several drug companies then quickly began exploring the possibility of developing pharmaceuticals that would mimic Delta 32 by binding to CCR5 and blocking the attachment of HIV. So basically, this CCR5 Delta 32 mutation, a recessive one, conferred basically freedom from infection by the plague and also AIDS. It is only present in white people. No other racial group has it. And according to the allegations in some more information that's contained in For the Record of 472, it isn't just white people, it's purebred, quote, Aryans, unquote, or Northern Europeans. Now, a caveat in the web entry here, the web posting that I'm going to excerpt here, there is no sourcing for this. Now, obviously, one has to approach anything on the internet with great caution. The internet is an open medium, and an awful lot of what's on there is complete BS, because there's absolutely no there's no regulatory device of any kind on the internet. So one always wants to be careful with information that is disseminated via the internet. There is no sourcing of what this person is maintaining about the CCR5 Delta 32. I'd be interested to see if the literature itself does indeed corroborate what this person is maintaining. From Aryan Genes Immune to Death from AIDS, we read, "This is the nightmare of AIDS no one wants to believe. As we come closer to celebrating on December 1st, yet another World AIDS Day, let's take a good hard look at what's really going on before we pour more of our ever-diminishing, hard-earned money down yet another horrendous sinkhole. It has been found that some Caucasians who have tested positive for the HIV virus were found to take a very long time to actually develop full-blown AIDS, as they call it. It has since been discovered, since 1997, that 20% of European Caucasians have the so-called Aryan, unquote, genetic disposition. If both your parents, in other words, are of Aryan descent, it appears you can never die of AIDS, even though you might be infected. The reason for this is in the genetic coding of the killer T cells, which are part of the body's immune system's protective shield. These are the cells which are attacked by the HIV retrovirus. The location of the attack has been discovered. It is on the CCR5 gene in the third DNA gene pair. The particular location is the Delta 32 receptor site. If either of your DNA pairs from either your mother or father is Delta 32 positive, then HIV virus can attach itself at that point. If you are Delta 32 negative, then HIV just floats around in your blood harmlessly for you. But even though you may be Delta 32 negative at both sites, you can supposedly still spread the virus. What has been discovered is that these 20% of European Caucasians are members of the Aryan gene pool. Also, it has been discovered that the farther north you go in Europe, say in Norway, Finland, Sweden, etc., you find the highest percentage of people that are Delta 32 negative at the CCR5 gene allele. That this would be a simple coincidence is beyond all human reason. Parenthetically, the scientific and medically qualified people to whom I spoke had this same reaction. Beginning again, that this would be a simple coincidence is beyond all human reason. To say that HIV suddenly crawled out of the woodwork in Central Africa by someone being bitten by a green tree monkey is one thing, but then to say that the only human gene pool on Earth that is immune to HIV is the Aryan race is a coincidence that even Howdy Doody wouldn't buy. What we are looking at is a genocide perpetrated on racial groups of the world that makes the Nazi Holocaust look like romper room. Add to that the global trafficking in drugs that specifically target minorities, the poor, and people of color. And while it may not look like the Holocaust during World War II, it doesn't have to. The AIDS epidemic isn't a mysterious virological disease, it is calculated murder, and a genocide that is beyond human comprehension. And since it is the venerated Aryan race that is immune to it, then one has to assume that they are the ones who promulgated it. Well, again, take some of that with a grain of salt, simply because there's no sourcing. There is more research to be done, but certainly it appears that only the white race and only people from Europe who'd survived the plague have the Delta, or their descendants have the CCR5 Delta 32 gene. We're going to take a look inside, too, at the possibility that perhaps some of this research may date from the Nazi concentration camps of World War II, and we are going to ask the musical question, when the U.S. brought many of these scientists to work in the United States, including war criminals of the First Order, is it possible that some of the research that they had been conducting ultimately was further nurtured and perhaps resulted in AIDS? It is, as I like to say, food for thought and grounds for further research. To flesh out your understanding on these and other topics, please do use the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com and use the other program material. Al at Spitfire, the people at WFMU, and many others have gone that extra mile to make this information available to you, so please utilize it. This concludes Side 1 of For the Record Program number 606, Project Paperclip and AIDS. This has been recorded on August 12th of the year 2007. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.